This is the Music Manumit Podcast, brought to you by DJ Dougie Death and Tom Ray, as well as the letter M and viewers like you. Here now is DJ Dougie Death. Hi, Tom.
Hi. That was good. It even sounded like you overdubbed it. Either that or you've got some schizophrenia thing going on.
Well, I mean, I paused, and then I started.
You talking. Did. Yeah. You did, and then you switched voices. That was good.
That was all the that Creative Commons vocal coaching that I downloaded over the since last week.
Have you really downloaded that stuff?
I really haven't.
I was wondering because I told you that there was a bunch of vocal stuff on archive.
Well, I haven't had time for that. Maybe one of these days I'll check it out just to.
Yeah, they're all over. There's a lot of interesting stuff on that page, and I've been on archive.org a lot lately to jump into our first story, and I trumped a couple of your stories on this one because this one
I saw that. This is huge. Go ahead and.
I know. I'm very upset about this. At first, I didn't quite know what to think about it, and I've been weighing my options. But let me start off with the title and then give you more background on it. Bandcamp, the site bandcamp.com, is now charging musicians for offering free downloads. Now, they do start with. Well, let me give more background. Okay, so I have switched all of my music that my band does, and we pretty much relied on Bandcamp. It seemed like a really legit service, and everything they said was like they were doing it for the artists, and they really wanted to have a community. Well, apparently the business model that they made didn't work out too hot for them, which is unfortunate. And now looking back at it, I looked at their business model and was like, oh yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense the way they did it,
which is
unfortunate. What it was is that they were going to be, if you charged $5 for an album, but you were still offering, free downloads as well, and then you sell one, you get all of that, minus the PayPal charges, which are minimal, and then you sell another $5 one. You do that up until the number mark, which would be you sell five $5 albums, the fifth one, all of the payment goes to them. So that was their plan. So they were thinking that everybody was, bands, they're not going to give their, apparently this is what they thought now. Bands aren't going to give away their stuff for free. They were thinking more this was going to be, the free downloads would be coming from larger artists, people that were making a lot of sales. Well, no, people like me were using it so that they could give their stuff away for free, but still offer the option for, donations, as I like to call them. Or, hey, you want to buy the album, name your price, kind of like the way that Radiohead did. Which was kind of what they based this whole thing on. So I look back at even some of the sales we've made, and we never make a consistent one-type sale, and we've offered no real minimum price, so they got nothing from us because we never made a consistent sale. So that's a flaw in the way they set it up. I wasn't aware until I started looking into this more when they made this announcement, which their announcement was on Friday. They said new accounts and the ones that exist come with only 200 free downloads, and all the existing accounts are granted 500, they say, but still, it's just the concept of the thing. So if you set up an account now, you only get 200 free downloads. So each time a fan downloads a track or album for free, it counts as one against your balance, and you can buy more. So they don't go all of a sudden, okay, you don't get free downloads anymore. They go, okay, now pay for 300 more downloads or pay for $1,000 more downloads. Now, $9 for 300 downloads isn't outlandish, but it's kind of the concept of the thing, and it's got people up in arms about it.
It seems backwards to me.
It does, and it's they have only themselves to blame for the way that they set it up. I think, if anything, they should have just done like PayPal and taken a small amount. I would have been willing to do that. Take a small amount, kind of like PayPal. They take like maybe, 10 cents on the dollar. That would have been 20 cents on the dollar. I would have been okay with that, but now what they've done is like it's this or nothing. You either get free downloads or you don't.
Right.
Unless you want to pay for
it. What I meant as far as it being backwards is, if you're going to make anybody pay, I would think it would be the listeners, not the artists. The artists can just put stuff on their own website, like they can have a blog like we do and just put your MP3s on there. I guess it's all in one spot, so that's some incentive to go there. People know to go to Bandcamp and look at, and look for things. But I don't know. 9 and 20 and even $75 is not that much, but
right.
I don't know. I just can't see paying. I mean, I guess that's what you do for a record label, is they get, I don't know, what you were saying about just taking a cut, that seems like it makes a lot more sense to me. Because these
Agreed.
Now they're like paying to be able to sell their albums. I don't know.
And a lot of it comes from, and they even in the article, and this is what kind of upset me, or the, not the article, but the blog post that they put on blog.bandcamp.com, is they go, they kind of blame people, they kind of say, well, this is the fault of the few bands that are just giving their stuff away for free. Like, they kind of blame them for it. Like, where's the line? It says, we've learned, however, that most of the music that's being given away through the site is from a relative minority of bands who have decided not to sell anything at all. It's obviously unfair to burden every Bandcamp artist with the cost of a few outliers giving away hundreds of thousands of free downloads, so we're making some changes to button that up. So they're kind of saying to everybody else, hey, blame these nameless people that we're talking about. And I kind of don't like that.
And they didn't send you a personalized letter that said, hey, Tom Ray, you're a dick.
But am I wrong in thinking that that seems kind of like they're passing the blame? They're kind of like,
well,
saying, oh, it's these other guys that are gaming our system.
Yeah, no,
you know,
well,
that was
exactly
the way that they presented it. Yeah, it's kind of a, and that's kind of what really upset me about it. And I was thinking about it and trying to take it in and going, how am I, because we have a new album coming out soon, and trying to think, how am I going to set this up? Am I going to still continue to use it? And I was starting to feel like, am I just overreacting? And then I came across an article today on a site called Public Spaces Lab. And the title is Bandcamp is Dead. At lab.pubspaces.com. And the title was Bandcamp is Dead. And I was like, hmm. And this was actually something I got from, it was a Twitter post from the Bloxonic Net label. And the article, they talk about the guy kind of reams the dude for, you know, not being consistent. Because Ethan Diamond, who's the guy that runs Bandcamp, he's the man that created Yahoo Mail. And he decided to create this. And even in other articles, they ask, is he a musician? And he's like, no. And then I started thinking more about that, because they made it sound like it was people who love music and musicians that built the site. That's the way they started out. And now I'm realizing it's more and more like this service, Artist Data out of Chicago, where they're doing like businesses used to do in the older days of music, by going, we're going to take care of all the stuff that musicians don't understand, because a lot of musicians don't understand the web, and they make a website and they don't understand how to set these things up. And they use all this, get people hooked on it, and go, see how easy we made it? Okay, now give us money. You know, and they're just kind of finding a way to get a service, but don't really understand what the artist needs. And it just kind of, musicians aren't rich people, and you're just trying to get your music out there, and it costs all this money to make the albums, to set up websites, and then you get this service that's like, hey, we feel your pain, we're going to help you sell your music. Oh, by the way, now you got to pay us to use it. And I just think that's kind of lame. It's stuff like that that really gets my goat. But on this post on Public Spaces Lab, there's also, he offers a couple of different alternatives, and kind of beginning in a way to go, hey, you could do this instead. So one of the things they mention is that a couple of bands have like deleted their account, like Bernadette Erica is one that they mentioned, and she deleted her Bandcamp account. And so then they offered different options on top of that, which one of them being archive.org net labels, which you can create a net label on archive.org and you can give away your stuff for free. There's an OK player that you can use to post things. That's the one thing I'm going to miss, is their player was really, really nice. They also mentioned Free Music Archive, because you can host your stuff there. And then there's another one that they mentioned that I'd never heard of before, which is kind of cool, but kind of confusing site, which is called Sonic Squirrel at, I believe it's sonicsquirrel.net. So I was checking out a lot of those today, and I was finding a lot of really cool stuff. Then after mentioning all this stuff, once again, he goes in and just berates this Ethan Diamond guy some more. Just talking about how he says things like, obviously now siding with the dying commercial labels as new and emerging artists will not be able to afford the Bandcamp service. Maybe I'm being too hard on Bandcamp, but you know, capitalists have their own worries and anxieties. And Diamond further lamented about his company's troubles in the comment section.
This next thing, the quote here, that sounds like really douchey.
Yeah, it comes off kind of like that other thing that I was saying in their blog post. Like the guy's going, if you've got a better way to do it, then I'd like to hear it, you know, is basically what he's saying. Kind of saying, I mean, taking my ball and I'm going home.
Yeah, I'm all for crowdsourcing things, but I don't think this is the right way to do it.
No. And I actually had, with the service Artist Data, I had a public argument with him on Twitter about the whole thing when they decided that they were going to charge for letting people... Artist Data was a site that would let you coordinate all of your different musical spaces on the web all at once. It would let you use that service to post to your blog and automatically put it on your MySpace, your Last.fm, your Facebook account, you know, all these different services at once. So you wouldn't have to go in and update all this stuff, and you could even update your statuses. So basically it was a way to do all of your stuff in one place to access, now I'm going to point out where I got upset, to access all these free services that you can do on your own if you need to. So then they said, okay, now we're going to be charging you to do this. And I was like, you're going to charge us to use your service to access our free crap. That's lame. And I kind of said that. And then he gave me a very similar thing about going, well, some people pay for the convenience. And I'm like, yeah, the people that you're prying on that don't understand, they don't have to. And that's where I get upset, is when they do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what all the back and forth was. But at least that one statement that some people will pay for the convenience. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean,
right.
It's a pain in the ass to deal with, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Buzz and Last.fm and this, that, and the other. I mean, there's stuff everywhere. And so, this is why people have personal assistants and such. I mean, maybe they were just advertising what they wanted to do differently. But, I mean, obviously, if you had a personal assistant doing all this stuff for you, you'd be paying that person. And to me, it just... you know, based on this sort of glass window look that I've got right now, that seems what they were trying to do, but that may not be the way they were presenting it or be accurate.
But here was the best part in how the whole conversation ended when I was talking to the guy from Artist Data. We were talking back and forth on Twitter, and he was using, I noticed in his posts, they were all being posted by Seismic, which is a free service that lets you coordinate a bunch of different accounts. So I said, so how much did you pay for the Seismic that you're using that I see you're posting with? And then he said, well, they have thousands or millions of dollars backing them. And I'm like, so? Then do that. So, but then that's the thing, is he ended up selling the company to SonicBids, which SonicBids, I already have a bad history of them. They're another one of those ones that have been around forever, and you have to pay to even let them post your stuff. They basically set it up so you can submit your stuff to festivals and large music events, but you have to pay them to submit it, which is the way A&R people used to do it. And that's what upset me. It's like, hey, you want to get into Summerfest this year? Well, you just have to give us $10 and we'll submit your music. No guarantee that you're going to get in, no nothing. They just go, pay us $10 and we'll give your music to them and then see what happens. And like, they do no follow-up or anything. They just submit your name and that's it. And a lot of artists believe that they're actually submitting their stuff directly to these people and going, hey, we just got this and you should check it out. They're not. They just put your name on a list and everybody looks at the list. And if like 800 people are paying them $10 to try and get in there, that means they have a list of 800 names. How are they going to look at yours? So it's just more of just keeping the system broken. So that's a different rant entirely, which I went into there. But still, back to the Bandcamp thing. I understand where he's coming from, but I don't like the way he did it. And that kind of is what did it to me. There was no mention that this might be coming up this way or anything. It was just one day he said, guess what? Now you're paying. We'll give you 200 free downloads. That's it.
Yeah, that seems like a bad way to do it as well. Yeah. I mean, you do a very good job with this, it doesn't sound like. I mean, whether or not they needed to do something or not is not really the issue. It was poor execution.
Very poor execution. And even sites like SoundCloud, right out of the bat, they go, okay, we'll give you two free hours, the way they set it up. Okay, you know that that's what it's going to be. It always has been that way. So,
interesting that you should mention SoundCloud, because our friends over at Bad Panda, I don't know if you noticed, they posted on this Bandcamp, the Bandcamp article, or actually the pubspaces.com article. They're the last.
No, I didn't see that.
First page. But anyway, they said, but obviously it would be great if they would do something special for net labels in Creative Commons world, just as SoundCloud recently did, or did recently. I'm word dyslexic, apparently. There's some other stuff, but basically that's the...
Yeah, because it says that they were thinking of using it. And that's the other thing, too, is SoundCloud does have a setup that's meant for net labels. Bandcamp has never actually offered that. They've never... There was a way that you could rig it so that it was set up for net labels, but they never actually offered an option for net labels. But they had a tutorial on how to try and make it like a web label where you would host it under a name and then have a bunch of sub-albums underneath the same thing. So you'd create one album, or you'd create one artist and then have a bunch of different albums that were released under different names for the artists. I don't know. I don't even remember, but I know that that was never a thing that they saw. So, oh, and even the woman who deleted her account right above that Bandcamp, or sorry, Bad Panda comment, Bernadette Erica, she wanted to make a quick comment on why she decided to sign up for Bandcamp and why she decided to delete. She said, as an indie artist, after coming back from a few years hiatus of music, what is important to me is to get my music out there for people to listen to, share, and enjoy, and then gaining money from music is not my first priority right now. I didn't see any other work under CC license as simply giving away stuff for free. Rather, a great way to truly connect with people who later, if they like it, would come back, and I'm summing up here, but basically give her money. And she said she thought she'd give it a try. However, the model that Bandcamp introduced now is suitable for established bands only and not too appealing to artists like me, in her opinion. It also became clear to me that they don't welcome free downloads, which is exactly what I'm talking about. That would be cool if they just would have executed it better. They don't welcome free downloads. That's the impression I got, and I think that's what upset me the most. And I'm sorry, that was me talking. That's not what she wrote. Just to be clear, I kind of went off book on that one. So she decided to
quote unquote.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so she decided that's why she decided to take it off. And she even points out that's the same way many companies have done before, like Ning, which Ning was a free social network service who all of a sudden one day said, boom, guess what? You're paying if you want to keep your site. Do you remember when that happened? That was a couple months back. I was never really a big Ning user. It was kind of like a MySpace thing, only under, like, everything was, you had your own little area that did a bunch of stuff, or kind of like Facebook, and that's what killed it, essentially, was Facebook and other services.
I thought Ning was open source. But that doesn't mean that Ning.com is not, there's no reason that you couldn't charge for access to a particular domain that uses open source software. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Expression Engine does it. If you want to talk about open source software, I mean, Expression Engine is a CMS that's built off of, it's a fork of some sort of free open source software, and then they made it a paid product. And lots of people really like it. But that's the big news this weekend, and that's kind of what I've been dealing with, is trying to figure out a new way. And I've got to, the main thing was, is Bandcamp offered a lot of really cool features. One was to download the album. You had to give your email address, which is awesome because you can still keep in contact with them. If they like your music, they don't have to go and sign up for something and look for you on your site. All they have to do is download the album. And then if you send them a newsletter, then they can always opt out if they want to or they don't care. That's fine. That was a great feature. The player was really nice. The music player that they had was super cool. And also, even though you could offer your stuff for free, they let you have a name your price, and PayPal and credit cards were built directly into it on the site. So you could actually, I mean, we've actually made a lot of sales on Bandcamp using it, and people can pay directly, and all of that was fantastic. So I'm trying to find a way to do all that on my own so that this services don't disrupt me once again and go, okay, we've decided not to do it. So I'm trying to set it up using services that have been around for a long time. And I'm kind of on my own blog, or even maybe on the band's blog, I'm going to be documenting and trying to share how we come about doing that when I finally figure out. I kind of got some ideas on how to do it, and I've tried out a few things, and I've been able to cover some, but not all so far. Like, I've got the email for a download thing, I've got the hosting, and now I'm trying to find more of a way to have a better player and built-in actual product sales all in one place. So I'll keep everyone posted as that comes along. But that's the news this week that I thought should top our stories.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to some of the other articles that you've posted. I see you have.
Well, before we move on, I was looking at Ning, and it is a commercial, not open source thing. I swear there was something, though, that was open source.
There was something that was very similar. Like, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of it. Well, there's always...
No, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Right. And there's always Diaspora that's supposed to be starting up this week. Let's see if that lives up to the hype.
Yeah, on the 15th, right? The 15th is Wednesday.
Yep, because they're all at Burning Man. That was the silliest thing ever. That's the reason they didn't launch last week, is because two of the guys were at Burning Man.
Hmm.
So, but we'll see how that plays out. I'm afraid it's going to be like the Star Wars prequels, where it's been talked up so much. When you get there, it's going to be like, oh, is that all it is? So hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, right.
And I see on the list of links that you have here, you just have a random link sitting there all by itself with no explanation. What's that?
The J-pop.
What's that?
Professor Click thing. I just thought that was pretty cool. So I was looking for a Professor Click album. It's on Jamendo, but download wasn't working. I was getting a corrupt zip file. Is that when you were having trouble downloading stuff? Is that what was happening? Corrupt zip files?
No, it would just say it's not available. Like, right where it'd say it's preparing your download, instead of saying it's preparing your download, it would just say it's not available at this time.
Weird. So anyway, you know, I saw this, because I saw jpop.com, and I was like, oh, well, that's weird. And then, you know, I wonder if it's Japanese. And then I go to the site, and it's all, like, English and stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of lame. And then I was like, but maybe that's just because this is a, you know, guy from Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I go, you know, to the jpop.com homepage, and sure enough, there's, you know, there's some English, but there's also a ton of what I assume is Japanese, considering it's J-pop. So I don't know anything about.
Oh yeah, there's
this
a couple of
website.
Japanese girl bands.
Yeah, and then.
Actually, there's a lot of Japanese girl bands on the homepage.
Yeah, they look to all be men. Although these guys, Ritual Day, they look like they could be Japanese, like a Japanese metal band. You see those guys? I don't know if the same bands are up on the
Ritual Day. Yeah, I see that
front page. Yeah. First Chinese death metal sampler.
Nice. And this is in regards to the article that we talked about a few posts back about finding your quest to find.
No, it doesn't actually have anything to do with that. It's just a sort of interesting. You know, connection.
I was just wondering, since you were specifically looking for something that was Japanese when you mentioned this.
Yeah, no, I was looking for the Professor Click stuff, actually. I mean, I just did this like an hour ago or something, and I was like, man, that's kind of cool. I'll put this on it. And Castalis was on Skype. I was wondering if he wanted to be on the show again. I didn't ask him, but I was like talking to him right before. I was like, hey, did you know Professor Click was on jpop.com? And he was like, no, that's interesting. Which was basically our response to that as well. But not not a Creative Commons site, but apparently, or at least if it is, they're not listing licenses. Actually, I didn't even check to see if they had.
Actually, even one of the homepage bands is the band that does our theme music.
Oh, wow.
The theme to this show is by Sun Ra. Sun Ra and his Astro Intergalactic Infinity Arcist. Sun Ra is our theme song. That's the name of the band that does our theme song.
So I'm just noticing here, at least on the Professor Click artist page, they don't have a license. Let me see if they have it on the...
Yeah, because I'm wondering... I mean, I know I'm also victim to not only signing up for every service, but like uploading my music wherever. I'm like, oh, they host music? Okay. You know, I'll do that from time to time just to see if anything happens.
Yeah.
I always make sure to put the license in it. But I'm wondering if, you know, if maybe Professor Click just kind of went rogue and started doing the same thing or what?
Well, I mean, they may have just grabbed it, too. I mean, you know.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if he might have just done it, and they're like, oh, yeah, we forgot we signed up for that. Because there are some where I'll find it in my bookmarks, and I'll be like, what's this? And then I'll visit the site, and it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot all about that. I'll tell you one thing. I don't like the design. It seems kind of spammy looking to me.
Well.
Not spammy looking, but I don't know. It just looks kind of.
It doesn't
look polished enough for me.
They like colorful stuff over there.
Well, no, I'm just saying, even in general, it's, I don't know, the big bubbly look is just so overdone these days. I think it's over. You know, the Web 2.0 look that was popular when Web 2.0 actually existed.
All right, well, I haven't been moving on to the next thing on the list because I'm mad at myself for not putting something on the list that I found really cool. There was a list of licenses that, I think it was from the FSF, but I don't remember for sure. And I thought I got it from this freedomdefined.org licenses thing that I put up here, but I don't see a link to it. But the other one, I'll find that, and we'll either get it in the show notes or talk about it next week. But this other one is really cool, and actually, I never can remember exactly that band's name. Is it Azura? A-Z-O-O-R-A?
Azura, yeah.
Yeah, so I was discussing with them a little bit on the blog in the comment sections about why that they use the non-commercial license. You know, I wanted to see if they, you know, had a reason for doing that.
And we even had somebody else comment about us talking more about the other forms of Creative Commons license, but not really talking about the commercial version a lot. Like, we always kind of promote the buy or share alike.
Yeah.
And even though we'll play everything else but the derivative, but yeah, just to add to, there's been other conversations going on the blog about that as well, but continue.
Oh, I missed that on the blog. I thought I got emails.
Or maybe that was an email. You're right. That was an email. That wasn't on the site. That was something that was forwarded to us. Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. But
it was like a week ago. It was somebody who had someone else listen to it, and they offered their opinion on what we were talking about and said that while we talked about Creative Commons license, we didn't really
that might have been the Azura conversation.
Okay. Well, then continue.
I think what he was saying, it's just a one-man band, isn't it? There's a picture of a dude on their website. Anyway, so initially he was like, you know, just saying that maybe we should talk about it more because they didn't really understand it. Just because I sort of suggested quickly sort of the things that we've talked about for a non-commercial. And basically he said, you know, you've talked about that you don't like the non-commercial, but you haven't really explained why it's bad. Right. I guess we talked about the fact that, you know, you get protection if you don't use non-commercial. Like, there are protections to keep you from getting exploited. But in that show, we didn't specifically say the non-commercial hurts, you know, free culture and things like that. And so he was suggesting that we should do that, you know, instead of just saying, hey, don't use it because the only reason you would use it, you don't need to use it because you get those protections for this. Instead of kind of sloughing it off and saying, no, if you understand these other licenses, you definitely won't want to do that. Which we didn't say that exactly like that.
Right.
But I think I can definitely see how we sort of gave it that tone, this assumption that, you know, people were just didn't understand what was. They didn't understand the other licenses, and that's why they were choosing the non-commercial. But we didn't really. I think in part because it's just tricky water, you know, and we don't want to say definite what the non-commercial is because it's just sort of nebulous, generally speaking, you know, but anyway.
And I do agree with what he's saying. It's very true. I mean, we have our one that we say we think this is the better one, but he's absolutely right. We should explain more what the other ones are, but which we've tried to, I guess, as we go along, we're learning and getting better at because we're learning as we go along a lot too.
Well, that's the thing about this. I mean, so what he did is there after this conversation, I was like, yeah, well, you know, I'll talk to Tom about that. And I don't know, a couple of days later or something, he came back and was like, hey, I found what I needed. And then over here on freedomdefined.org/licenses/NC, there's a whole big thing about why you shouldn't, you know, use the non-commercial. And it says, the case for free use, reasons not to use a Creative Commons-NC license, incompatibility, and then, you know, there's just a bunch of different things on here. And, you know, and it's not like the longest article in the world, but it's pretty in-depth, so we're not going to read the whole thing out here. They go through at the end some counter-arguments and their rebuttals. So the people that are like, no, we really need non-commercial, they have some rebuttals to those arguments down at the bottom of that. So they do break out four key points. So the key problems with the Dash-NC licenses are as follows. And I'm going to read these out unless you object, Tom.
As long as it's not like 14 pages.
No, it's those four points. And you're not, okay. You're not looking at it.
Then you may proceed.
Okay. They make your work incompatible with the growing body of free content, even if you do want to allow derivative works or combination. So, for instance, and this is me editorializing on point one.
Nice. See, I started a trend, didn't I?
Yeah. That means basically, you know, and there are plenty of examples of this. This is just one example. That if you use a Dash-NC license, you can't use, that music can't be, or that art cannot be used on a Linux distribution, for instance. Because that you can't, I mean, they could, I guess, as long as, you know, those Linux distributions said not for commercial use, but the big ones, you know, people are using those all over the place for commercial purposes. It basically, they're not going to, unless, you know, some of the smaller ones that don't care that much about that sort of stuff. They just do what they want. Mm-hmm. But the Fedoras and the Ubuntus, the Debians, they're not going to use it. That's basically what they're saying. And other things are not going to be using it as well. Things like LibreFM, for instance. It's incompatible with them because they don't accept non-commercial things. So point one is that it's incompatible. Point two, they may rule out other basic and beneficial uses which you want to allow. Editorial, I think this is where the sampling plus comes in, the basic and beneficial uses. Then point three is they support current near infinite copyright terms. That's what the non-commercial licenses support that. I'm not exactly sure what that means. I mean, they all use copyright. But anyway, that's one of the key problems according to freedomdefined.org. And then point four is they are unlikely to increase the potential profit from your work, and a share-alike license serves the goal to protect your work from exploitation equally well. So that's saying, you know, if some dude uses your stuff, those are technical words, by the way, then...
That was very technical.
Yeah,
nice.
then they'll have to share it again. So they're going to think twice about using it, and, you know, you can reuse the remixes, you know? That would actually be a kind of a cool project. To just go back and forth and, like, one artist remixes it, like, creates a song, and then another dude remixes it, and then another guy remixes the remix, and they just keep going back until, like, it's totally unrecognizable from the original. Like, has anything like that ever been done? That sounds like a really cool project. It's like a remix war or something. I don't know.
I was trying to think of something funny, and I got
war is not funny, Tom.
I know, but I was trying to. I have the basic concept, but I couldn't think of a song. I was basically trying to think of some really awful artist covering a really good artist's song, but I couldn't think of one.
And then the really good artist remixing the really bad version,
which is what should be done to, like, take it back, kind of like that. That's when U2 did Helter Skelter, and they said, "This is a song that Charles Manson stole from the Beatles. We're stealing it back." Sorry, I don't know what the hell made me quote that, but oh yeah, that's right.
So I typed in Remix War into Google, and there's actually an album called Remix War, but I'm pretty sure...
Are you sure it's not a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
No.
Where he's a super, super a futuristic DJ robot from the future.
DJ Kickflip. No, it's a Pitch Shifter album. I remember them from back in the man, back in the day.
I also remember it from any T-Pain song, because he uses a pitch shifter.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's just some remixes, but I don't think they actually went back. This was a one-campaign war, apparently. That's what it would appear to be. Not very... apparently, these remixes got shocked and all, so too bad.
That's unfortunate when that happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna look at this later, though, because I don't know. I think that's an amazing idea that I just came up with, if I do say so myself.
Yes.
So the next one, unless you had anything else to say about the licenses.
No, carry on.
Well, did you read this? I sent it out to one of the local user groups, the How New Art Can End the Copyright Wars. Did you read that?
No.
Well, it's pretty sweet. You should read it.
I know. I was kind of looking at it. I had it open when you were talking about the last thing, and I was kind of looking at it, but I was also trying to pay attention to what you were saying.
That's all right. I don't. When I'm reading stuff while you talk, I don't pay attention.
Good, then I won't feel bad.
No, don't feel bad. You have to be like, Doug, Doug. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm here. Still here.
Uh-huh.
So basically what they're saying is that, you know, on current music, the labels, the Universals, the Sonys, they've got that. And nothing is going to change that, you know, short of, I don't know, Sony headquarters blowing up. They don't say that. That's just my graphic metal reference for the day. So they make the argument that Linux is taking over the phone market through Android.
Mm-hmm.
And Linux has been, you know, on servers forever. But, well, not forever, because Linux hasn't always existed, but
well,
whatever.
To the point, too, that it's a real hassle when you find out somebody's running a Windows server and you're like, oh, we have to try and get it to talk to it. That's it,
yes.
It's so strange how, like, that is so commonplace server-wise, but home-wise, it is not.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what they're saying, is that Microsoft has the desktop. And it's like, you know, there when Linux was first created, you know, in the early 90s, it was too late, sort of thing. There's no going back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, but for new genres of music, you know, if there's new technology or new, you know, just creative people are creating new genres, that those genres can really thrive under Creative Commons, because that's something the labels don't have. And they're saying that all the, like, art critics, the music critics out there, they're only going to talk about new stuff. So as long as people are making music that sounds like U2 and Slayer,
mm-hmm.
not at the same time, probably.
That would be cool if they did. Mashup.
Yeah. But as long as they're doing that, you know, as long as it's imitation, and I think it's pretty, I mean, I don't think they go as far, really, as to say, you know, if you're doing the same genre as somebody else, then it's clearly not new. I don't think that's exactly what they're saying.
Hmm.
But they're saying that, you know, the people that are on the cutting edge, you know, the people that are really sort of the critics, are not interested in, you know, the little tweaks that you're doing on YouTube, on your political agenda that sounds like somebody else. But, you know, it's still new music, but it's not...
Well, think of it this way. What about when rock and roll was invented?
Yeah.
Then someone else said, I like rock and roll. I'm going to make a rock and roll band. You know, how far back? You know, when you get to the band thing, like, you sound like this band. Are you, you know, stealing their songs
right.
or whatever?
Well,
like, what about genres of music? I mean, you could go as far back as that. Although, truthfully, when Elvis did introduce rock and roll, they also said that he stole it from, you know, from the black community. So that actually
right.
was a big issue back then. But another
yeah.
thing, too,
but
I mean,
anyway, that...
if that were the case, then Amy Mann would not be able to make any albums because the Beatles would just sue her over and over again for stealing their chords. Because everything she writes sounds
well,
like a Beatles song.
The point is, basically, I'm trying to say that's not what they're saying.
Oh.
But what I'm trying to get at is that, and it would be helpful if you'd read this.
No, I want you to explain it to me. Darn it.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to not do is say that people that are making rock music aren't innovative. I'm trying not to say that because that's not what they say. Let me see if I can find a quote here. It's kind of a long article.
Well, no, I found one kind of what you're talking about. They're saying it is silly and naive and a waste of time trying to bring down the music industry for making more of their music and offering it for free. For better or worse, popular music is their music. They own it. They have signed the artists people care about or made you care about. They have in-house songwriters who can write one of these derivative songs per day. They have the expensive studios, and they have all the right context. So they're basically saying that the music that you hear on the radio, for the most part, over the years, has always been the music that they made. But the music on the internet has become the actual artist's music. Is that kind of the point that you're trying to get across?
Well, to an extent. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's not the point. I think that's the point I might be trying to get across, but that's not ultimately the point they're trying to get across.
Right. Well, I mean, this article goes into several points, and there's words after words about these points. And they use a bunch of examples, too. And that's why I think that it's they're getting the point across and then using specific examples, even talking about the videos that the bands are using or artists or that photographers that are creating a video using music behind it, vice versa, you know, bands using photography for their videos that they found, and just kind of there are different ways to mash up what's going on the internet. Whereas one of them here, Blackbird by Blind, was a video where he started using Flickr photos and put them all together to match up with his songs and made a video for his song on it, is I think what I'm reading about that. And I also saw a similar article about that too, where a guy did that, where he wanted to create a video and he found some cool imagery and basically just used that imagery from Flickr that was under a Creative Commons license as his video, and then just gave them credit on his website underneath the video for it, and did like a whole, and it was a very nice video. It was well put together. And the song, it was a personal acoustic song, but still the whole concept is there, is like that is what the music industry used to do by paying people just to go, okay, you know, kind of like the old CC Music Factory thing where they had that Everybody Dance Now song, whereas they had actual studio musicians do it, and then they hired some pretty people to pretend to be the band in the video, and that was the band. But then everybody found out those aren't actually the musicians in the song. I don't know if that is a really dated reference, but that's the first one I thought of, or if you want to go back to Milli Vanilli, you know. But now they're saying, like, what people are doing is they're actual artists and musicians that can talk to each other and actually create the music that everybody wants to see and hear, and that's what's becoming popular.
I think that they're talking about that, but that's not their point.
Okay.
So they have like five paragraphs here that sort of set the stage. And that setting the stage is when I was rambling, not knowing exactly how to explain it without just...
Because you were expecting me to know it.
Reading it. Yeah, I was hoping you'd help out on that.
Well, I just did a little bit, except I missed the point. I don't know.
Well, so they spend, you know, the five paragraphs talking about this, setting the stage. And then they say... So what are we to do, you ask? And remember I don't even know if we said this, but the name of the article is How New Art Can End the Copyright Wars. It's a theme today, the war-themed podcast. Mm-hmm. And so it says, enter 2009. A new genre evolved out of almost thin air. Unlike all the other genres before it, its birthplace was the internet. The genre has influences from 80s shoegaze and new wave, and it's largely electronic dance music that can't be danced. It's music created entirely on computers by bedroom artists. Reminds you of the Linux bedroom coders of the 1990s. Its name is Chillwave, also known as Glo-Fi audio samples here. And then they have that. It says, while software to synthesize music has existed for many years, either its actual audio and production quality was low, or the created music had little musical value. Ouch. That's my editorial ouch there. So if you were creating digital music in the 80s and 90s, they just told you to go blow yourself. I'm continuing. Editorial done. Techno and trance music, for example, had remained a Euro thing mostly and never took off with most music critics. Besides, the music critics is what they're talking about here. This is me editorializing. So that's their whole point. I mean, I think... their assumption here is that music critics make the world go around, which in a sense is true. I mean, if you're trying to create buzz, then that's certainly true. And then it continues. Besides, techno slash trance was also very commercial in nature from the get-go. Chillwave, on the other hand, is different. It's a new genre with a nostalgic, somewhat sad sound. Its grassroots, sprouting after audio software, has matured in recent years. Nothing like this existed before, and so the music blogs took notice. And that's the point. Within a few months, they hailed Chillwave as the next big thing in music. Exactly because this was an internet thing, made by very young people at zero expense, the songs were mostly free to download. Some of these songs were licensed under the Creative Commons, and some were just free to download. Using the CC license was simply a cherry on the cake, an added value, not the main attraction. The main attraction was this new kind of music that felt so different. So basically, I mean, this is the same sort of thing that they're talking, you know, that sort of comes up in, you know, open source communities. You know, you have these people that are like, if it's not open source, it's not good. And, you know, and then you have the other people that like, no, the reason open source is so popular is because there's a lot of good open source software. If you make crap software, it doesn't matter if it's open source or not. And again,
right.
I don't think they're saying that all the, you know, standard genres are crap exactly. You know, open source software people tend to be a little harsh in their comments about things sometimes. Because it's all on the internet, so, you know, it's not like you're going
to
go...
Yeah, no, people in the internet in general tend to be harsh sometimes in their comments.
Yeah, but they're saying, just like where Linux has been really good on the phone and really good on the server, and thus it has taken off, things that are new and exciting, of course, I mean, that's sort of what good is to the music critic, you know? It's different than the functionalness of software. But good in this sense is new and exciting and something worth talking about. You know, I mean, rock music can be good, but there's only but so many, you know, only so many, you know, articles, so many copies of Rolling Stone that you can sell right. talking about the same music.
Well, and also that's the reason we have the music podcast next to this to show that, because I've noticed when I tell people about Creative Commons music, for some reason they always generally think that it's just really bad music that people are creating in their basements or some sort of world music or just not regular music that they would normally listen to. And that's what we're trying to prove, that there's a very diverse community in the world. I mean, we found locally there's not a huge community, but as you go farther out that there, you know, and that's what we're trying to raise exposure to and also prove that it doesn't have to be bad just because you want to give it away or share it with people and you know, retain that sort of sharing license.
Yeah, definitely. So they do talk about this the new video genre as well, as far as being a new genre that's, you know, backing up this point about new genres are how, you know, copyright war is going to be over. Mm-hmm. how Creative Commons is going to win, though there are, you know, there are people that don't care at all about Creative Commons that still think that, you know, Disney's, 4,000 years of copyright is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what they were saying with, you know, Creative Commons is just a cherry on top sort of thing. But they say some interesting things after those two examples, at the very end of the article too. I'll just read it. Again, this whole new video genre ties perfectly with chillwave music because the music tries to make you remember of a particular summer memory, and the video is trying to do exactly the same, but with visual stimulation instead. Sometimes the videographers use their own footage, the chillwave artists themselves are nowhere to be found on screen, and more often they use public domain video from the 50s
and
60s.
I've done that. I've actually done a series of videos from archive.org using public domain video and playing the song behind it and trying to chop it up to match up to the video. It definitely is a thing. And just like what I said before about the using, you know, Creative Commons photography on Flickr, which now even Flickr has video that you can use as well.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of the people that are already on Flickr that are using the video thing are people that actually shoot very, very nice stuff. And that's what they're there for. I mean, You know, definitely. There's a lot of classy stuff on there.
So what the big point, the sort of, because when I sent this out, I think I said something like, this just blew my mind or something like that. And so the end is really when it, like, to me, sort of hit home. I mean, the other stuff, you know, about defeating, you know, or winning the copyrights or whatever, like, that really, like, caught my attention too. But this was sort of, like, took it to another level for me, thinking about it this way. It says, my husband said it best when I showed him these new expression forms that are taking the artistic online community by storm today. He likened this revolution to Impressionism, and he was indeed correct. From Wikipedia, radicals in their time, early Impressionists, broke the rules of academic painting. They portrayed overall visual effects instead of details. This can potentially be big and lead to other genres and other kinds of artistic expressions. Expressions that the old media establishment won't be able to follow through as easily, because innovation will come from these bedroom kids via the internet. And then the labels, which are betting on their old music, will crumble under their own weight and fall apart in their irrelevancy. Culture will once again be largely free, and Creative Commons will be there to help do so. Now, whether or not they're right in their prediction of this, it's quite a bold statement to say that, I mean, they're listing two examples of new genres, but what they're saying is that history has told us that when there are new genres that come along, those, you know, spur on yet additional genres. And so basically the way I took this is the floodgates could be opening. Now, I don't think this is going to happen next week. I don't think they're saying that either. But, you know, if these are really able to sort of make a big impression, which it kind of is what they're saying is already happening, then there's going to be other stuff to follow it, is what they're saying. And that was sort of, for me, I was like, man, you know, it's not just these two things. This could really
happen. Yeah, and usually what starts that is when the people and things that you rely on, kind of going back to, to a lesser extent, going back to what we had talked about at the beginning of the podcast, it's when people that you go, this is where I normally get my stuff, suddenly go, yeah, that's not how we're going to do it. And then you notice, wow, I don't really have control over my stuff there, or I don't really have control over what I can do. Whereas you're going la-di-da-di-da, just like, you know, when Facebook did their whole privacy thing and everybody got super upset when they realized, like, oh, they just totally changed the privacy thing. And you can be completely opened up, even if you don't want to be, through this gaping hole that they have in their privacy restrictions. And everybody, and that's what launched Diaspora, because what happened was, is Diaspora was already going on, and then everybody heard about the Facebook privacy mishap, and then they were like, heck with this, I'm either going to go back to my MySpace account, or I'm going to look for something else. And then Diaspora just happened to be right there. Like, their timing couldn't have been better. And that's how they lucked out. And that's exactly what he's talking about. That's what does this, is people are going to find more and more that when somebody does something that everybody goes, wait, that ain't right, then they're going to start looking for other ways to do their artwork. Or when somebody starts claiming some ridiculous copyright law on someone else's music, it's things like that that really do it. And that's the beauty of it, is it's the people that usually are the puppet masters, when they screw up, it really shines a light on how messed up it is and how people should really take matters into their own hands. I hope that made sense. Okay, good.
Made sense to me.
I wasn't sure. Sometimes I go on a rant and I just see white. I don't know what I'm talking about. So I saw that we had one more thing that we were going to talk about today, an article that you had linked to called Weak Copyright is Awesome. What's this all about? I kind of looked a little bit at at the article, something about weak copyright helped Germany outpace the British Empire, was the title.
Yeah. So they were just saying that basically the Germans were able to share documents more freely, and that gave them an advantage in society.
So this was more document based rather than music based. But it's general, absolutely. It's talking about copyright laws.
Right, exactly. So,
because I thought it was going to be, I thought, you know, when I first started looking at it, I was searching it to see if they started talking about GEMA, which is GEMA, which is Germany's version of ASCAP, or, you know, BMI.
Mm. And no, they're talking about like in the 1830s and in 1836. I mean, that's, you know,
in the olden days.
Right, exactly. But they're taking a historical perspective on copyright, basically, and mm-hmm. saying, you know, because of this, you know, they were able to do, you know, it says it was the chronically weak book market that caused England, the colonial power, to fritter away its head start within the span of a century, while the underdeveloped agrarian state of Germany caught up rapidly, becoming an equally developed industrial nation by 1900. Took Germany until 1990.
Germany wasn't nothing until 1990.
Yeah, but so basically, well, you know, and obviously they give the, you know, they talk about how Germany wasn't really Germany until the Franco-Prussian War. So it says Prussia established a copyright law in 1837. And then it wasn't effectively enforced outside of those borders. So it was very laissez-faire outside of Prussia. And, you know, it really took off in these places where it was, you know, where it was laissez-faire. And, you know, so that is in contrast to Britain, where they started having a copyright ordinance in 1710. And I guess they had another one in 1695 before that. But it's like kind of a long article. I guess it's like three wired pages long here. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to go into too much detail about it.
No.
But I just thought it was interesting that, I mean, we've got two sort of historical things back to back here. So we have sort of a historical perspective from the art world that says, you know, new genres create new genres. There is a, you know, subset of genres that are kind of established, and then there's interesting things that explode outside of that, and not just in music, in any sort of art. You know, they're talking about Impressionism in the other article. And then we also have this other article that's talking about, you know, books and, you know, cultural works of any sort, presumably like industrial manuals, things of that sort of nature that, you know, where it's a positive for it not to be, and I guess that's, you know, in some sense a little bit different, but I think that we can take the, you know, take the point that clearly distribution is easier when there's laissez-faire. Now, we don't really have that problem now to an extent because it's so easy to distribute things now. I mean, if you
right.
want to distribute things, you just put it on the internet, and, you know, even in, you know, countries where they don't have, you know, desktop computers and such, like cell phones are huge in Africa. You know, they kind of skipped the whole laptop desktop thing. And so people can still, you know.
Well, and wireless capabilities are a lot easier on mobile devices.
Right. And so, I mean, you can still just, you know, download your music or whatever, you know, like there's nothing stopping you from doing that. You know, if all you've got is a phone, you can still download music onto that, and that's not an issue. But my point being that, you know, when you look at broadband usage and stuff like that, you know, the number of people that have broadband in the world is pretty low. But when
yeah.
you think about people that are connected to the internet through cell phones, that number jumps pretty significantly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, distribution is, you know, that's what mattered in the 1700s and the 1800s. And even in the 1900s for most of the time.
Hmm.
But now, I mean, we still have the same sort of thing. You know, if you, all things being equal, you know, freejz.com is going to do better than jz.com. You know, sign up and you can download, you know, from jz.com. And it's a, or if you don't want to sign up, you can click this link to freejz.com. And then you just download it. I mean, how many people are going to sign up when they can just go to this other place and get
Four.
It with any effort? I mean, so, and actually they kind of talk about that in the other article too, that there's no, for a lot of people, there's no distinction between pirating music and using Creative Commons music. And this is, of course, I mean, this is true in software too. I mean, right. If all the people that weren't going to pay for Windows were using Linux, we would have a much larger Linux community. And, you know, they use the example of Weezer, that, you know, if somebody doesn't want to pay for a Weezer album, then they're just going to go pirate it. And that some Creative Commons artist that produces similar music to Weezer is not going to see the benefit of people not wanting to pay for Weezer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
that's
new
always
genres
the argument
are so important.
Yeah.
But the thing is that that's always been the argument. But yeah. There haven't been the new genres until 2009. And so we're sort of seeing the...
Well, I've noticed even on the music show that when we're posting, because we post what they label the genre is on their, you know, on their song post.
Right.
And I don't think I've written down something's rock music more than like maybe two times. It's like everybody's got their own their descriptions out there where I'm like, they just made that up. And I'll click on the link and I'll go, no, there are a lot of other people under the same genre, you know?
Actually, I haven't done it that way for the most part. I have a couple times, but usually I just listen to it and I'm like,
oh, and then you just decide what it sounds like?
It sounds like this. Yeah.
I always go by what they post that they say the genre is. So that's all. I think that's all we have to cover today. We covered a lot on that one. We even have some stuff that we're going to have to let leak over until next time.
Actually, we had that stuff from like 2 weeks. Some of this stuff we'll have to go through it and prune it some more.
Well, we had pressing news. That's what it pushed a lot of that stuff out of the way. The whole Bandcamp
definitely,
thing.
Yeah. Definitely. So
we had to be topical.
Some of this stuff is timeless. You know, it's not going to change. In
very true.
2 weeks, so.
Yeah. So did you want to close us out with your intro voice again, or shall I do the honors?
I wasn't mentally prepared for this. This has been the Music Manumit Podcast. You can find them and download shows at musicmanumit.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 646-495-9205 and extension 36355. You can also send us your music. We have a Dropbox on our website. Also, you can find us at soundcloud.com. And here's Tom with anything else that I missed.
You did not miss anything. But thank you for joining us at the Music Manumit Podcast, and we'll see you next time.